Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the One Piece podcast, where the lore hounds your guides to the Grand Line. I'm John.
And I'm Moses Ayegba. And this is our coverage of the massive anime hit One Piece.
In this podcast, we'll be giving some background on ourselves and the scope of this podcast, giving our general thoughts about the show, and discussing the first four arcs of One Piece, consisting of episodes 1 to 30. Be sure to stick around to the end of the podcast for programming notes about our podcasting schedule.
For early access to ad-free episodes and exclusive content, visit patreon.com/thelorehounds. We're on a membership drive to hit 100 members before our one-year anniversary on July 11th. Again, more info at the end of the podcast.
If you're enjoying our content and want to give us a leg up, leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. It really helps our standing in the ranks, which helps more people find our podcast and helps us make more podcasts. If you want to get into the conversation, send an email to onepiece@thelorehounds.com and we'll get back to you the next time we record an episode. Or head to thelorehounds.com and leave us a voicemail or a contact form entry. One more note, if you want to support us directly and get access to ad-free and early episodes, head to patreon.com/thelorehounds and subscribe today. Moses, this is a new thing, so why don't we discuss what we're doing here? You're not David. You're not my usual co-host. You're not even Brandon, my occasional co-host. You're brand new here, so who are you and what are you doing here?
Well, John, we've known each other for a minute we've known each other. And ever since we met, you know I've been into anime, One Piece being the primary one that I've been into. I'm really happy that you've gotten yourself into the series itself, and I'm very happy that you're a brand new viewer to this. I've been watching One Piece since, God knows, I was strong back then. Like, what, 2005, 2006, when it came out on Adult Swim for the first time? And I've been a constant viewer and reader ever since.
Very cool. Very cool. I saw a few episodes on Adult Swim back in the day, and it wasn't for me at the time. You know, I wasn't ready to explore the Grand Line with Luffy. I was just a wee lad.
Let me tell you, the 4Kids animation or the 4Kids dub was absolutely terrible. I believe we're going off the Funimation dub, which is much, much better.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
I'm watching the one that says Funimation, so
yeah,
that
much
makes
better.
Sense. I didn't realize that there were different dubs.
Yeah, there were different dubs. I'm a manga reader as well, and a lot of people are not a fan of the 4Kids dub. Funimation dub is much, much better.
That's super interesting. Super interesting. So in this podcast, let's just make clear what we're doing. We're not doing a rewatch podcast. I know people are into those kind of things lately where you have these longtime watchers who talk full spoilers for the whole show. No, we're not going to spoil things for you. This is for the people who want to, you know, re-experience it again. If you want to hear a new person's perspective plus an old timer's perspective, and it's for people watching the show for the first time. So we're not going to spoil anything past the current arc, and we'll let you know which arcs those are up front, and we'll let you know which arcs we're going to be covering the next time at the end of the podcast. So this podcast will also be an occasional one, and we'll give a heads up when we're covering something new and when the next podcast is going to come out. But keep an eye on our Twitter @thelorehounds, or you know, on our Discord server, which you can find in the show notes, if you want to be part of that conversation and know what's coming next. I know, Moses, you just joined our Discord server, so you should be in there too.
Yep, brand new to it. It's very active, very fun. Lots of people have a lot of very intellectual takes on a lot of different shows.
I know. I love our Discord. Riveting. People are chatting away.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, they welcomed me with open arms immediately. It's a very pleasant Discord to be in.
You built
a nice community, John.
Well, thank you. And welcome to it. So let's do a quick background on One Piece, since this is something that it's funny because it was the most watched show in 2022. And yet I feel like everyone I talk to does not know what it is. I've been telling people in my life lately, you know, I'm watching One Piece. Nobody knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I think a lot of that has to come from, okay, so I guess kind of, I don't want to say historically, but yeah, you know, we use the term historically. There's been a big three kind of anime slash quote unquote slash mangas. And that was One Piece, Naruto, and Bleach that have been kind of dominating for the past 10, 15 years. They kind of took the place of Dragon Ball after that. Both Naruto and Bleach are over now, although I guess Bleach is making a comeback, but One Piece has been going for 25 years almost now. 25 years, yeah. They just had their 25-year anniversary, and it's been going strong. So, especially with the end of Naruto, One Piece has kind of taken that void of a lot of the English viewership. It's always been the biggest kind of anime slash manga in Japan, but it's really kind of filled that void in terms of the most popular anime over here in the Western world.
Super interesting. And yeah, you mentioned this is a long-standing franchise. This the manga started in 97. The anime started in 99. So this has been going longer than most shows on air, for sure. And certainly longer than, I guess, any other anime, right? Is there any other anime that's been going longer?
There's some. What's that detective? Detective Conan? That thing's been going on since, God knows, since like the 70s or something. That was crazy. Yeah.
But it's just fascinating to me that we are up to, we're over 1,000 episodes now, we still have this community that is hungry for more, that really wants more of Luffy's story and wants to see where the crew goes from here.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Ted Lasso earlier, or we were talking about Ted Lasso a little bit before, I guess, off air. It has a lot of the same kind of positive vibes that Ted Lasso has, the always wanting to root, the optimism, the always wanting to root for the main characters.
Right.
Kind of feel to it. And that's what has really kept a lot of the community involved a lot of the times, myself included.
Yeah, I guess that is a pretty compelling part of One Piece, is just that, you know, Luffy is someone who sort of has that goofy persona and sort of plays off as, you know, I'm a little dumb. I just do what Whimsy tells me. And when you get down to it, he's really, really wise in his decisions. It's pretty fascinating to watch, because the other characters will jump to an emotional response and to a really knee-jerk reaction, and Luffy will say, I'm gonna cut to what matters. And it's something that struck me as unique about this show, because a lot of anime has these goofy main characters or goofy side characters who, you know, you could just watch and laugh with, but this had some kind of heart with the main character that I have not seen in an anime before, and I was really, you know, taken with.
Oh yeah, Luffy stays part of the course. This whole, he's very singular mindset focused on, I guess we'll get into it, him trying to be the king of the pirates. That is his goal, and he will not deviate from it at all.
Right, exactly. So we're already sort of talking about the main premise a little bit, and so let's get into that. So I was thinking about how to introduce this world to people who don't know anything about it, and really everything you need to know is in the original intro. So I'll just read it here. Wealth, fame, and power. There once was a man who obtained it all.
You got to use the voice, John. You got to use the voice. You got to use the voice.
Oh, then you do it. You do it. I'm not ready for it.
I got you. Me. Wealth, fame, and power. There was once a man who obtained it all. The Pirate King, Gold Roger. His last words at the execution stand sent people from all over the world out to sea. My wealth and treasure? It can be all yours if you want it. Search for it. I left everything in that one place. Men now set sail for the Grand Line in search of romance. The world has entered a great pirate era. Boom. Sail along. Okay. All right.
Yeah, yeah. You got it. That's the. Yeah. Is that the We Are song?
I guess. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we eschewed using that song for the intro. Instead, I went with the victory music for when, I guess that's what I think of it as.
There was no wrong choice.
When the gang finally, you know, comes together and figures out how to defeat the enemy, that's the music that plays often, and that always gets me hype. You know, that always gets me hype, so I went with that.
Well, One Piece has a great soundtrack. There's really no wrong choice there, John. There really isn't.
Very nice. Well, we've already talked about our background with the series, and we've talked about sort of some background on the show, so why don't we get into the first arc that we want to discuss. So again, we're going to be talking full spoilers of these arcs, but nothing past them. And we're doing the first four arcs today. That's Romance Dawn, Orange Town, Syrup Village, and Baratier. Those are episodes 1-30 of the anime. So if you don't want spoilers for those, if you want to go watch that, you know, they're like 18-minute episodes if you cut out intro and outro. So go do that, come back to us, and we will be here. With that spoiler warning out of the way, let's get into Romance Dawn. So I'm going to read a synopsis here. We're introduced to Monkey D. Luffy, a young pirate who ate a devil fruit called the Gum Gum Fruit that gave him the power to stretch his body like rubber, but took away his ability to swim. After helping Kobe escape service as Alvida's cabin boy, the two head to Shellstown, where they find the great pirate hunter Roronoa Zoro imprisoned. Luffy defeats Marine Captain Axehand Morgan, helps Kobe achieve his dream of becoming a Marine, and rescues Zoro. Zoro then joins Luffy's crew as its first member. Moses, what did you think of this arc, especially your first time, and if you've revisited it since, what is your opinion on this intro? Is this a good introduction to the world?
So, I'm not gonna lie, I believe the first time I watched it as a little kid, even now, I hated Kobe. I hated him so much. He was just... I loved Luffy. I love the way how he bursts out the barrel out of nowhere. He isn't even the first character you see in the whole show. You know, he kind of just pops out of the blue. Mm-hmm. And I love Luffy. I love his overenthusiasm. I loved how eccentric he was. I love the fruit, the gum and a gum no me, you know, the rubber fruit that he possesses. I love everything about it. He starts off, in comparison to Alvida, he's a powerhouse.
Right.
Basically takes her out like it's nothing. Inspires Kobe to come along. Etc. Etc. When they get to Shellstown, now you want to talk about when I really started getting into it. That was with Zoro. I'm not gonna lie, Zoro is my favorite character in the show.
Oh, he's great. Oh, I mean, who doesn't love a good Zoro?
Oh yeah, Zoro is the best character in the Three Swords. Everything, that was the coolest thing I've ever seen. Having one in his mouth, everything like that. I remember when I was a little kid and he tells Luffy to go get his swords, right? And Luffy's like, "Which swords? Which swords?" He's like, "All of them, right?"
Right,
puts one in his mouth, Three Sword style. That was the coolest thing I've ever seen as a little kid. That's what really hooked me into the show, was the two of them kind of linking up for the first time. Not only that, but they give, you know, they set it out like, oh, Zoro's this criminal who's about to be executed, blah, 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 blah. And they really set this kind of, the narrative, you know, you would think that the Marines, the Navy, etc., they're the good guys. They're the ones who you should be rooting for, right? Mm-hmm. But you find out that they're really just a bunch of assholes.
Right. Right away, they're corrupt, right? Like, away,
off the
they
bat.
Are the awful people.
Off of the bat, they're just assholes. And they go into Zoro's backstory, or not into his whole backstory, but they go into, you know, why he is, and why he's about to be executed, why he's chained up, etc., etc. And you really start gaining sympathy for this character off the bat, who you would, you know, in most animes, most shows, whatever, it would take a while to kind of warm up to a character like that. You know, they do like this long thing where Zoro would be like this asshole, et cetera, et cetera. Right. And he would slowly turn over time, blah, 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 blah. He doesn't have to change his character or anything. He is who he is. And he stands on that off the bat. And that was really something that caught my attention as a little kid. That was something that caught my attention as I, you know, read it again as an adult, et cetera, et cetera. So I really think this is a great introduction into the show / anime manga.
I think that's right. Especially something that struck me about this arc is that Luffy is trying to become king of the pirates, and the guy he rescues explicitly says, "I want to be a Marine. You know, I want to be your enemy, basically."
Yeah.
And rather than try to sway Kobe to his side and try to get him to join his crew, he says, "Oh, that's your dream? Great. Let me help you get there."
Yep.
That's something that really shows a great character right away. You know, someone who is. It's funny because he's often seen as selfish by his crew members, because he'll just, you know, he'll eat all the food, or he'll go off on an adventure, a risky adventure, and get them into danger. But really, when it comes down to it, if somebody needs something, Luffy's the one that you want on your side.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a great point to make, John. You know, Luffy is selfish in the sense that he's going to do whatever the fuck, whenever the fuck he wants to do it. And that's ultimately why he wants to be king of the pirates. He wants the freedom to do what he wants in the sea. It's not a power thing with him. He just wants to really do whatever he wants to do without being told that he can't do it. But Luffy will give leg and limb, heart and soul, everything he's got for anybody, basically, good, bad, somebody who he just met like Kobe, somebody who he just met like Zoro. He will go sacrifice himself all the way out. And another interesting thing is Zoro's introduced as the pirate hunter.
Right.
And those first couple episodes, Luffy's trying to convince him over and over again to join him. And he's like, "No, I fucking hate pirates."
Like, right.
He's willing to sit there and starve and take the risk that the false promise that Axehand Morgan gave him, that I forget the exact amount of time, but it's
30 days, I think.
30 days? If he can sit there, yeah, okay, that sounds about right. If he can sit there for 30 days and you know, be chained up, whatever, et cetera, he'll let him go, which we find out is a bunch of bullshit, by the
right.
way. He was going to execute him one way or another. That's, you know what's crazy? If he would have stuck to his promise, Axiom Morgan would have stuck to his promise, there's a good chance Zoro doesn't even join up with Luffy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, so that's a good point, too, is that both Zoro and Nami start off the series detesting pirates, mm-hmm. like really being anti-pirate. Zoro is a little easier to sway because he's more of a, well, I'll hunt him down, but I don't think he has sort of a moral objection to piracy. I think
he just wants that money.
Right. He wants that gold. He wants those berries. Mm-hmm. Sorry, not gold. Berries,
yeah.
And something about Zoro is his dream is to become the top swordsman ever. And so when Luffy is trying to sway him to his crew, in contrast to with Kobe, where that dream is incompatible, this dream is very compatible. Mm-hmm. And he says, oh, your dream is to be the best swordsman? That sounds great. I need the best swordsman on my crew. You know, let's work together to achieve our dreams rather than being in opposition or being on separate tracks and doing it alone.
And you know, just one last thing, this is kind of random, but it's been kind of debated for many years amongst the kind of One Piece community. Is Zoro Luffy's first mate? Is he not his first mate? It's a very like kind of debated topic. Me personally, I view this kind of introduction, et cetera, et cetera. And like I said, Zoro's my favorite character, so maybe I'm a little biased. I view Zoro as the first mate.
Okay.
A lot of other people won't. A lot of people, you know, it's a debated topic, but they establish this connection almost immediately that you will see just stay strong throughout the entire series with no spoilers. The same way that Luffy will give his heart and soul for Zoro, Zoro will absolutely give his heart and soul for Luffy.
Right. Yeah. I think that's right. You know, I should mention here, I've seen through about episode 150. I'm over there, so I'm not fully spoiler free in what I know right now, but I'm much more spoiler free. I've seen, you know, 10% of the series. In contrast to you, who's seen the whole thing.
I'm caught up to date right now, yeah.
Right. We get a few introductions. We get, you know, Axan Morgan. We get his son. We get Kobe. So, and even Alvida. So we have a lot of people introduced right up front. The last thing I wanted to talk about in this arc is sort of the introduction of the mythology of this series. And so the first thing we learn about Luffy, or one of the first few things we learn, is that he's a rubber man. And he ate the gum gum fruit, which is something called a devil fruit, which we find out gives whoever eats it a special power. But it also takes away their ability to swim because it makes the ocean turn against them. And that's kind of an interesting thing to do to a pirate, right? I mean, they have to live on the sea.
Oh, yeah.
And they could do with more power for fighting because clearly everybody's fighting in this world. But not being able to swim is a big problem if you go overboard, if you have to, you know, swim to do anything. And I like that they don't make Luffy invincible and they don't make the other devil fruit people invincible. They give them sort of a weakness right up front. Oh,
that's a pretty fatal flaw off the bat.
Right.
That's a huge fatal flaw off the bat. And, you know, you see it almost happen immediately when they flash back to his childhood with Shanks. He almost drowns like 5 seconds in to eating that devil fruit. So,
right.
Right. You know, it's something to just keep in mind as the series progresses, that devil fruit users at all. And there's no counter to it. There's no, oh, he ate devil fruit, but he also has gills so we can swim or something like that. No. If they eat the devil fruit, there's no swimming at all. That's it.
Right. Yeah. That's that is certainly a big weakness in this world where it's all islands.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's it for this arc. Why don't we move on to Orange Town? Here's a synopsis. Luffy accidentally ends up in Orange Town, which is ruled by Buggy the Clown Pirate.
I said Zoro was my favorite character, John. I'm lying. Buggy's my favorite character.
Oh, Buggy's great. I want Buggy to be king of the pirates.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Absolutely.
He deserves it.
Yeah. My bad. Go on.
That's all right. So this town is ruled by Buggy the Clown Pirate. After initially befriending a thief named Nami, Luffy is betrayed by Nami and caged by Buggy. Nami and Zoro work together to free Luffy before Luffy fights and defeats Buggy and his Chop Chop Devil Fruit powers. Nami does not join the crew, but decides to travel with them for a while on one of Buggy's ships. Moses, what are your thoughts on this arc?
So, overall, Buggy's my favorite character. I'm joking. It's still Zoro. But Buggy is a great character. He develops over time as well. But Nami is kind of the main set piece being introduced here. And she is the classic femme fatale. kind of being introduced here. You know, she uses her looks to get away or to get away with a lot of things, to scam a lot of people, et cetera, et cetera. And as we go on, you know, you'll figure out why she feels the need to act that way. She's incredibly intelligent.
Yes, she is.
If you actually go through the One Piece database, they have a couple of, you know, One Piece is huge. So they had a couple of like guidebook handbooks that came out back in the day. She is one of the smartest characters. Like, they did a whole intelligence rating just overall. Wow. Yeah. She's straight up one of the smartest characters in the series.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's something that's extremely, you know, going to be beneficial down the road. But at this point, she is very, like you said, anti-pirate, period. And it doesn't matter if Luffy's the nicest guy in the world. Doesn't matter at all. She does not like pirates at all.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not going to say spoilers, but I think in the next episode we'll discuss why. Mm-hmm. But yes, she is very anti-pirate. She makes that very clear up front. The minute she finds out Luffy's a pirate, she does not want to work with him.
A huge 180.
Even in her sort of deception, because, you know, it does seem like she's being a little deceptive here. Even in her deception, she doesn't agree to join the crew, which is funny because she does do that with Buggy. But with Luffy, she doesn't use the lie for some reason.
You know, it's all about her kind of politically and strategically positioning herself to, you know, make moves that are best for her. And something I love about this series or about this arc itself, well, the thing that One Piece does really great, and you saw with Kobe in the last arc, and you kind of see with some of the characters in this arc, they really take their side characters really seriously.
Yes, they do.
Man, I forget the name of the dog and the dog owner. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But that whole, the dog in this whole arc, was very emotional. He sat there fighting to the death, essentially, to defend his owner.
The pet food store.
Right. The pet food. Yeah, exactly. The pet food store. Didn't like Luffy at first, but Luffy has this quality, which we've seen in the previous arc and will continue to see going forward, of just being able to win people over that just don't like him.
And Luffy says, oh, your dream, you know, this concept of dreams is so central to the show, right?
Yep.
Of I'm going to help you accomplish your dreams. And Luffy says, well, your dream is to defend the store for your owner. Sure, great, I'll help you, I'll do it. And then he does the best he can, and he at least delivers him a piece of that store, which is what allows the dog to finally say, all right, Luffy's not such a bad guy.
You know, it's crazy. This is, once again, how he wins people over. He risks his entire life to just get that little, what is it, like, it's like a piece of food, or it's like a,
I think it's like a little bag, yeah.
Yeah, it's a, he risks his entire life for a dog that he doesn't know to, yeah, and I think this is the first time Luffy actually gets into a full-blown fight. Like, he basically one-hits Alvida in the pilot.
Yeah.
He and does. He messes it up. He gets into a full blown fight with the, it's like a beast tamer or like a lion tamer or something like that.
Yeah. That is, so there's the lion tamer. That's one of the crewmates of, Buggy. And then there's also the acrobat. So he gets into the fights with those two. I guess, Zoro, I think, takes care of the acrobat more than Luffy does.
Right.
But it's pretty funny because the beast tamer goes, well, I could get any beast under my control. And then this dog goes, nah, not me, though.
Nah, I'll pass.
Yeah, and pretty good.
Talking about Zoro, I do remember this when he fights the acrobat or whatever.
Yes.
He's wounded from the fighter. He's still, you know, struggling because I believe he got chopped up by Buggy.
He did.
He gets chopped up by Buggy pretty early on.
Buggy takes his hand, because, you know, he's got the chop chop power we haven't really discussed yet, and he can split his body off into pieces which fly for some reason, and so he takes a dagger in his hand and he stabs Zoro in the back.
A recurring theme is going to be Zoro goes into a lot of fights wounded, but he also has an inhuman, even more so than Luffy honestly, ability to take damage.
Yeah,
and it's something that'll keep popping up in I don't want to say it's kind of used as a nerf sometimes for Zoro, but it's totally uses a nerf sometimes to, you know, bring him down a little bit or bring him down to a level playing field with some of these weaker enemies. Because as we'll progress, you'll see that how it typically goes is that Luffy ends up fighting the boss of the arc, and Zoro will end up fighting the number two of the arc.
Yeah, constantly. Yep. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, something else that's great in this arc is that Nami does get to use her intelligence. You mentioned Luffy is struggling to get
the chop chop powers under control, because, you know, he can punch this guy all he wants, but at the end of the day, the guy's going to come back together. Nami says, well, but what if he doesn't have all his pieces? And she ties up his torso and like his parts of his limbs. And now he's just this crazy little guy, and Luffy can easily make short work of that. I love the way that that wraps up. It's great. It really shows how their teamwork is going to develop through the series.
So one of the things that's introduced in this arc, it's kind of just glanced over a little bit, not glanced over, it's mentioned briefly. Buggy kind of gets super triggered by it, is Buggy's connection to Shanks and the straw hat that Luffy has. That's something that, to just keep in the back of your mind, Shanks is a character who we haven't seen yet, and we probably aren't going to see for a while, but he is constantly kind of brought up as this kind of overarching, lurking kind of figure. And Buggy mentions him here, talking about the Straw Hat, et cetera, et cetera. Just something to just keep in mind going forward. The importance of the Straw Hat, the importance of Shanks, even the importance of Buggy overall, to be real with you.
Right, yeah. Especially the Straw Hat. We haven't really discussed that yet. You know, the Straw Hat that was gifted by Shanks, who was his mentor, who had the devil fruit that Luffy ate.
Oh, it's straight up jacked it. Just jacked.
Yeah. Luffy, you know, again, you know, the he's sort of selfish on a small level, right? On like a day-to-day level.
He's a little
But on the big picture, he's very selfless and very giving.
Absolutely.
And so because this was a fruit, even though that was a huge thing and it was worth quite a bit, this is something where, you know, Luffy just saw, oh, a snack. Yep. And so he just took it without asking. That's Luffy's personality.
Basically, yeah. Basically, he does what he wants whenever the fuck he wants.
What happens if you eat two devil fruits? Like, I feel like Luffy is the kind of guy who's going to encounter just multiples. It's going to happen.
If you eat two devil fruits, you die. That's basically it. You can't have two devil fruit powers.
Well, that's good to know. I will be sure to limit my devil fruit consumption to one. For now, I think it's time we take a quick break. And we're back and ready for the Syrup Village arc. Luffy, Zoro, and Nami arrive in Syrup Village, a quiet village with a loudmouthed liar who can't stop shouting about pirates. The liar, Usopp, has become close with Kaya, a local rich orphan with a kindly butler named Clahador. After discovering that Clahador is actually the pirate Captain Kuro and is plotting to kill Kaya for her money, the Straw Hats and Usopp team up to save Kaya and the town. After saving Kaya, they are gifted their new ship, the Going Merry. Usopp decides to join the crew. Moses, you get first pick on what you want to talk about with this arc.
First crack, baby. Ooh, good for Moses. Okay. So this is one of the low-key, more important arcs of the series. There's a lot that gets introduced here. First off, we learn about Usopp. Obviously, he joins the crew. That's a big deal. He's the third official member because, like we said, Nami hasn't joined. They get their ship, the Going Merry, which, I mean, they need a ship because they've been either A, on rafts or little boats, or having to rely on doing things like stealing buggy ships right now. But the Going Merry is going to be, you know, a long-term kind of boat for them, something that they need. Comes equipped with a lot of things, kitchen, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's their home, basically. When you're out on the sea like that, it's their home. The other thing...
Right. It really becomes part of the crew, right? The Going Merry?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 100%. Another thing here, I know I talked about Shanks kind of being this overarching, looming kind of character. We find out that Usopp's dad ended up actually leaving Usopp and his mother when they were young to go explore the sea as a member of Shanks' crew.
What a guy.
Yeah. Father of the year right there.
Yeah, exactly. And then he leaves his kids so traumatized that he spends every day lying about pirates coming just to get attention.
Just one. What a family dynamic. There's no need for therapy there. None at all.
Do you buy that the villagers are actually, you know, sad when Usopp stops yelling about the pirates? I'd be like, wow, this guy finally shut up and I could sleep in on a Saturday.
It's like one of those things where you miss it when it's gone. You know what I mean? It's like their daily routine or their weekly routine or their monthly routine, et cetera, et cetera, had to be dealing with Usopp and all of his bullshit, you know. And when they actually finally see his character at the end of the arc and seeing that he actually does strive to be this brave warrior of the sea, et cetera, et cetera, you know, it's something that they'll end up missing. It's kind of like a bittersweet thing when he leaves. But yeah, I mean, I would have been annoyed as shit by Usopp every day. I would have smacked the shit out of him. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty bad.
He's pretty bad.
The introduction of Captain Kuro is fascinating to me because this was the first villain that really seemed like scary to me. Those claws, the way they're dripping blood. And I honestly thought he had devil fruit powers at first. I thought he was sprouting claws like Wolverine.
Yeah.
But apparently they're just gloves.
Well, yeah, he comes off as like the real first competent type pirate. And he has this long-term plan that's been set in motion to essentially, you know, kill Kai and take all of her money. You know, with Buggy, it was like, Buggy's like, I think we were sitting talking about Buggy, how he's our favorite character, blah, 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 jokes, whatever. Buggy's an idiot. All right.
Yeah, he is.
I love Buggy, but he's a fucking idiot.
Right.
This is the first time where the villain comes off as an actual kind of threat who's not only that, he's got bloodlust, and from what it seems, his movement, the way how he's able to move quickly, et cetera, that comes off as very intimidating, very, very scary. This is the first kind of chance where it seems like Luffy might actually, you know, lose. You know, Buggy had his unique skill set and blah, 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 et cetera, right? Where he could chop up. And that was more of an annoyance.
Right. And it was something that sort of was tied to battle only and not to cunning and, you know, situational manipulation.
Yeah. So I mentioned that Nami was one of the smartest characters in, you know, one of those first guidebooks. Captain Kuro was also one of the smartest characters mentioned in that guidebook. The other one, I believe, in this area of the sea that they're in right now, the three smartest were Kuro, Nami, and Ben Beckman, who was, you met him earlier, he was Shanks' right-hand man at the very, very beginning. They're the three smartest characters in this area of the sea right now. So Kuro is a very formidable threat, especially this early on within the series. And you know who I love? I love his right-hand man, the Michael Jackson ripoff.
Oh my gosh, the hypnotist.
Yeah. I forget his name off the top of my head, but I love that guy.
Oh yeah, that guy is pretty spooky too.
Yeah, so when you take in the Michael Jackson ripoff, you take in the brothers and the Yabin brothers, they really come off as a kind of formidable threat. And at this point in time, it's basically just Luffy and Zoro fighting. Usopp is pretty much useless. I mean, he does his little tricks, et cetera, here and there.
Right.
But it's basically Luffy and Zoro, and you already have an injured Zoro fighting. You have Luffy, you know, he's in a bad kind of matchup against Kuro. Kuro's got these swords and Luffy's a rubber man. That's not a good matchup
for him. And Kuro's fast. Super duper fast, which is what really throws Luffy for a loop. He's having a lot of trouble keeping up because, you know, he's stretchy and he's strong, but I don't think Luffy is super fast. I mean, it takes him a minute to stretch out most of the time.
Yeah, he's still kind of, it's not just that, he's kind of adjusting to this kind of new pirate world that he's in, or, you know, fighting at this kind of high of a level.
Right.
He just, when we start off with Alvida, he's just literally setting out on his adventure. So most of the fighting he's done has been, or training that he's done has been in home, in house, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And Kuro really comes off as the first threat who might actually kill Luffy. Is aiming to, or has bloodlust in his eyes. You know, Buggy was willing to kill or do whatever, but Buggy was a joke of a character. Axe Hand Morgan wasn't shit. Alvida got one shot. This is the real first threat that Luffy has faced throughout the series.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. And also we have Usopp, who is such a complex character because he's a liar, right? Like he genuinely goes around all day lying, and yet his lies aren't always for evil. You know, he helps Kaya feel better with his stories, and he honestly apparently helps the villagers feel better about their day by giving them a routine. And in the end, it's sort of a boy who cries wolf situation where no one will believe him, and even Kaya won't believe him about Klahadore being Captain Kuro. And it really makes Usopp struggle. And a lot of people, I think, would take that and say, well, I tried, and just go home. And Usopp really shows his perseverance here. And I think that, you know, you mentioned he uses his tricks here. And sure, I think they can adequately be called tricks in this episode. But I think that's just because he has not had a real challenge yet, right? He's just been having his weird Usopp pirates with toddlers.
Yeah.
And he's just getting into shenanigans. Whereas I think as the series goes on and he faces real threats, he'll be more willing to use his brain, because I do think he's pretty smart. He's not as smart as Nami, but he's pretty smart. Use his brain, use his technical skill to create weapons that actually do damage.
Yeah, and Usopp's a giant coward, right? But the same way how you talked about Luffy earlier kind of being selfless in the small term, in the small scale, but being selfish in the small scale, but being selfless in the bigger picture things.
Yep.
Usopp is the same exact way. He's a coward in these kind of little moments, but when push comes to shove, Usopp is there. Hmm. Usopp will risk it all. He really strives to be this kind of brave warrior of the sea.
Right.
And that's something to really, it's an admirable trait. It's a weird trait, but it's a very admirable trait that he has.
Right. Yeah, that's super interesting how he sort of mirrors Luffy in that transformation, in that, you know, when push comes to shove, he's there for you. Mm-hmm. Hmm. So we've talked about Clahador, Captain Kuro, whatever you want to call him. We've talked about Kaya. We've talked about Usopp a bit, although I don't think we've gone deep into Usopp's backstory, which, as you mentioned, has his father going away and he just wants to follow his dad the whole time. And his mother dies young as well. Yeah. So he's really left all alone very quickly. Then we have this gifting of the Going Merry, which is funny because, you know, Merry is the guy who gives them the Going Merry. And yeah. I thought he was going to die like three times because Clahador just like stabs him so much, leaves him in a pool of blood, and then he's just fine by the end of the episode. And it doesn't seem like much time has passed either. That's another thing that happens in One Piece. They're like, this person's almost dead. They're at the brink. And then they're recovered in like 2 hours.
Well, we talked, you know, kind of off the stream about this a little bit before. That's kind of, I talked to you about how I kind of have some hang-ups about One Piece as a long-term viewer. That's one of my hang-ups right there. It's a lot of characters kind of survive when it feels like they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And even throwaway characters like Merry, once again, like, a lot of the strengths that they have, where they'll take these side characters, they'll give them these crazy in-depth backstories, they'll really make you feel for them. It's that you really get attached to them. It feels like that's also one of the weaknesses of the show. Yeah. One of the few weaknesses of the show is the inability to kill off these characters at the same time. I don't know if that's the writer getting too attached to the characters, and so he doesn't want to do anything with them long-term, or, you know, the possibility of bringing them back later, et cetera, et cetera. But it's something that's always kind of bugs me about the series. I love it. Don't get me wrong. I think One Piece is the greatest piece of fiction of the 20th/21st century.
That's a claim.
It is. I mean, tell me something that's been more successful. I guess you could say Lord of the Rings. There's a couple. But One Piece is certainly up there. You look at comic book sales, it just surpassed Batman. It's on the verge of surpassing Superman in terms of the greatest selling comic of all time. So, yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I think that, you know, you can fall too in love with your creations and then you don't want to get rid of them. So it's certainly a weakness, but I think that it has its strength too of, you know, the writers are really putting a lot of effort into serving up a rich background for everyone.
And, you know, every time I think about that, I kind of have to backtrack and realize that One Piece is a kid's show.
Yeah.
It is meant for kids. So that's something I kind of have to backtrack and kind of realize. But
although it's very bloody for a kid's show, I would not show this to a 5-year-old, you know, I would.
We need a little PG-13 at the very least on it.
Right.
At the very least, yeah.
Right. Yeah. It does not shy away from violence at all. There's a lot of blades. There's a lot of blood. There's a lot of suffering. Let's be careful with that.
Yeah. And honestly, a lot of that is probably just the difference in cultures, to be honest with you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's about it for the Syrup Village arc. Why don't we move on to Baratier and introduce the last crew member of the day? The Marines shoot a cannonball at the Going Merry. Luffy deflects the cannonball and sends it into the sea restaurant Baratier. There, the Straw Hats meet Sanji, the sous chef of the restaurant, with a mean roundhouse kick. When the restaurant is attacked by pirate captain Don Krieg, Luffy defeats Krieg in exchange for his freedom from working off the damage to the ship. Sanji, determined to find the All Blue, joins the crew as its chef. Lot of interesting concepts here, right? We have the All Blue gets introduced, this idea of the four oceans, right? The four seas, is that what it is?
Yep.
Coming together, and all the seafood of the world comes together in this sea. I feel like that's bigger than just seafood, right? Like that has to be more significant than just fish.
Oh, yeah. And this, I hope this isn't a spoiler or anything, John. They have not even introduced this concept of the All Blue or what the deal with it is at like the present point in the series.
Wow. So this is a really long-term thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very long-term thing. And we get introduced to Sanji, our very own Chuck Norris of the crew. And
good way to describe him.
Yeah, you'll as time goes on, you'll realize, or yeah, I guess this is kind of the introduction of the big three, which is Luffy, Zoro, and Sanji.
Right.
You're going to constantly see that they are fighting the three main villains of the series, or of each individual arc. They're kind they're the top dogs in the crew.
Right. Like, they're the ones who can really take on the more supernatural strength.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so we learn a lot about the world here in this situation, about a lot happens within here. One of my other favorite characters is introduced here, Mihawk.
Yes. Yes. Mihawk, it comes out of nowhere, right? Like that, it seems almost out of place when you think about it with that arc. But he comes out of nowhere just because Don Krieg pissed him off on the Grand Line. And Zoro goes, oh, all right, a chance to fulfill my quest. And he does not do that, we learn.
You know, he's not even close.
He's gravely wounded.
Yeah.
But he impresses Mihawk, who says, you know, I think you got potential, kid. Why don't you work on your skills a little bit and come meet me on the Grand Line?
Yeah, and let's be clear. Mihawk could have killed every single person there in a second. Without even breaking a sweat.
Although, you know, I think that Zoro has the potential to be very strong, just like Mihawk.
Oh, absolutely.
I think he got a little cocky. He tried to rush his development instead of just biding his time a little more. But you know what? At the same time, that's what impressed Mihawk, was he was willing to lose it all. And this is a theme we see come up again and again, too. You saw Kobe emphasize it in the first arc. Is these pirates of the Straw Hats are willing to give up everything to fulfill their dreams. And that's what Mihawk saw in Zoro, was he's willing to die just to try to beat me.
And with Mihawk, we get introduced to the concept of the seven warlords of the sea.
Right.
He's the first one to be introduced, which are essentially seven extremely powerful pirates who have been sanctioned by the government, essentially, and the government aren't allowed to hunt them down. They're essentially allowed to have carte blanche over whatever they want to do in the sea,
right?
Without the threat of the world government, with the exception that when the government needs them or the government wants them to do something, they're obliged to you know, answer that call. And
theoretically,
Mihawk is the first one to be introduced here, and really, we've talked about he's not a villain. Let's be clear about that. But compared to every other character we've met so far, who's had a fighting scene, he is on a whole other level.
Right.
Like about 10 whole other levels.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah, Luffy could not have defeated him. I think that was
clear.
If he decided to slice through Luffy, Luffy'd be dead in a minute.
In about a half a second. Like I'm saying, he could have cut through. And here's, I believe this concept got introduced here. The East Blue, that the sea that they're in right now, is the weakest out of the four seas. So.
Okay. When you say the weakest, what do you mean by that? Like the weakest people, you know, as pirates there?
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at the world map, you'll see where it kind of intersects at the Grand Line. So the North and West are the two strongest of the seas. They are on the other side of the Grand Line, which is where the strongest pirates generally reside. And the South Blue and the East Blue are the two weakest, with the East being the weakest.
Right. So the Grand Line is the culmination of, you know, the best of the best pirates are there right now.
Yeah,
and then the North and the West are where sort of second place are.
So the North and the West are within the Grand Line, essentially.
Oh, okay. Sort of considered part of the Grand Line there.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
Exactly. So
the Grand Line is basically a way to cross the continents, right? Without going around. And that's the big deal of it?
Yeah, essentially. And I guess we'll get into that later on in the series, et cetera, et cetera. But at this point in time, it's just the most notable thing about the East Blue is that Don Krieg, I believe he's the one with the highest bounty, either that or the villain we'll talk about in the next episode. They are the strongest pirates within the sea. And as you can see, Mihawk is coming from the Grand Line, and he makes chopped cheese out of Don Krieg in about 2 seconds. The strength level is not even comparable.
Right. And
we're talking about the guy who has, and if Don Krieg's not the strongest, he is the one with the biggest crew in the entire East Blue at this point in time.
I mean, he's pretty strong. He gets a number on Luffy too. I mean, Luffy struggles a lot with this fight.
Yeah.
It's interesting how much he struggles all of a sudden, whereas he did not really struggle with Buggy that much. But I think that they do a good job of ramping it up. You know, after Clahadore, you see that Luffy's vulnerable, and I think that's good, because just watching Luffy triumph over everybody without a struggle would be kind of boring.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Zoro is taken out pretty early by Mihawk in this series. So Sanji basically steps up and fights the number two in this series or in this arc. And overall, this has to be one of my favorite arcs because of a lot of the importance that was introduced to it from introducing the All Blue, introducing the Seven Warlords, the Shichibukai, the introduction of Sanji and establishing that kind of big three. And you also kind of start to see the origins of Sanji and Zoro's beef a little bit here, and that'll be kind of a recurring theme going forward. Or I don't want to say beef, but a kind of brotherly rivalry between the two of them.
Right.
You kind of get to see the introduction of that within this arc here. At the end of the arc, it ends with Nami, I believe, stealing the Going Merry and just, you know, going off on her own little adventure.
Yep. It does. It does. She leaves with the Going Merry, and we're not sure where she goes next, but that's what we're going to talk about next episode. But before we leave this arc, I just want to talk about a couple more things. You know, we're introduced to Sanji here, and we get a pretty rich backstory of Sanji. Mm. You know, he's with the chef. He's with his head chef, and he, you know, he almost starves to death as a child, and he sees a very tough pirate get kind of soft, right? Get, you know, getting to the point where he wants to save a kid who's about to drown, and he's willing to sacrifice his leg for it. You know, he just wants to help. And even after that, instead of actually splitting up the food in two, he tricks Sanji into eating all the food so that Sanji survives. And this is clearly a formative event for Sanji because of the way he treats the Don Krieg pirates later as they're starving.
Yeah. Yeah, Sanji promises to never let anybody go starving, ever, which is something.
And also, he's vehemently against food waste.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, Sanji, they don't really, I guess they emphasize it a little bit here, but Sanji is one of the best cooks in the entire series, off the bat. Luffy gets really lucky getting Sanji off the bat, and especially Luffy, somebody who's a glutton. He gets really lucky getting Sanji off the bat. And another thing to mention about Sanji, man's a simp and a half. I don't know what else to say about that, but Sanji
is. Let's talk about it for a minute. Let's talk about, all right. So there is a thing in Japanese anime. I think it is a thing that comes up often. There's this casual misogyny, especially in stuff from the early 2000s. Now let's not pretend American cinema, especially in the early 2000s, was not casually misogynistic.
Yeah.
But, these episodes are dated. Right. I mean, Sanji is deeply problematic in the way he treats women. Right. He's always sexualizing women. He's always, you know, trying to flirt with everybody who identifies as a woman here. And it's not great. It's not great. But other than that, I really love Sanji's character. So that's why every time that happens, I'm like, oh, do we have to do this again? The hard eyes and everything.
I'll say this. As time goes on, he becomes a lot more chivalristic as opposed to just blatantly misogynistic.
Okay. Well, that's better.
Yeah, especially as we get kind of deeper and deeper into past the point where you're at this point in time, John. Like, he gets very chivalristic. I mean, he's still kind of, you know, he's a little simpy still, but it's much more in a chivalristic way than it is in the misogynistic, women can't fight for themselves and I have to do all this. I know exactly what you mean, especially One Piece, what they do, they really have a lot of strong, and you'll get introduced to them too over time, they have a lot of strong female characters down the road.
Yeah, they do. Well, that's the thing. It's complicated because they'll have, you know, a character like Nami, who is a really strong female character, and then they'll have Sanji, who is fawning over her and being weird about it.
Oh, and she completely uses that to her advantage.
Yeah.
100% uses it to her advantage. Yeah. And, you know, that's... Hey, Nami's got to use what her mama gave her, right? She works here. You slay, queen. Slay, Nami. Slay.
Well, what a note to end it on. I think that's all for today. So the next episode, we're going to be doing the Arlong Park arc and the Logtown arc. That's going to be episodes 31 through 53. So it's a little bit shorter than this episode. We're doing 23 episodes. You got to watch to catch up with us on then. And again, this is an occasional podcast, so it's not like you have to watch 23 episodes in a week. These are some great arcs here. The Arlong Park arc especially is the one that really grabbed me on an emotional level for this show. So I'm really looking forward to chatting with you, Moses, about that.
No, yeah, the Arlong Park arc, that is kind of the... what One Piece does is they kind of take these mini arcs you know, all these arcs so far, Barazzi, Aesir, Village, etc., etc. And it's a common theme that they do. To essentially make one super arc, and that's what Arlong Park is. It's kind of the culmination of all these arcs, of the story of all these arcs coming together, and
right.
especially on an emotional level. You find out a lot about Nami in that arc.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, Moses, let's do our outro here. We've got a Patreon, patreon.com/thelorehounds, and that's what keeps the gears of Lorehound Central turning. That's what keeps us putting out podcasts and taking on fun side projects like this One Piece podcast. And our top tier on Patreon is our $10 tier called the Lore Masters. These people support us just because, you know, they'd like to hear their names shouted out at the end of our podcast. And they'd like to just, you know, give us that little bit of extra support. And I can't believe how much we've grown over the last few months. We've got 23 Lore Masters now.
They love you, Johnny. They love you.
They love us and we love them. So here's our thank you list. Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Lavinia T, Dew 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Joyce E, and Andra B. Thank you all so much. You are all keeping us well stocked in our resources to keep sailing the Grand Line on our podcast. So thank you very much. Quick programming notes about what we're doing for the rest of April and into May. I'm not sure when this podcast is going to drop, but if you're listening at the end of April or early May, we just had an MC Universe podcast drop April 29th. That is about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. It's all the lore you need to know to go watch it. So it's non-spoilery. You're just going to talk about the first two movies and other things in the MCU. And I'm really looking forward to hearing that one. I'm not on it, so I get to just be a fan for that one. We've also got Ted Lasso Season 3 going. That's going swimmingly. And we've got, of course, every month a new episode of The Lorehounds Play with Brandon the Bard. Last month we did The Last of Us Part 1. This month we are doing Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. And one other quick note, we are just starting White House Plumbers and Barry. So we'll be covering those shows in short form. Again, you can find all this on our Discord in our community updates channel. You can find the schedule there. And we hope you'll join us for that and join our Discord for the conversation. Thanks, Moses, for joining me and have a good one. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.